Kathy and I had been dating for a few months in high school when I invited her to have dinner with my family. Now, I was one of four kids, so six folks around the table, and to which she joined us. And I recall the scene going something like this. Pizza delivery was the fare, and when the box was opened and placed on the table, everyone swooped in and grabbed a couple of pieces and began eating. Kathy looked at the empty box and then her empty plate and whispered to me, "What just happened?" She got food from the second box, but my family was like that. Competition at every turn and not in a good way. We argued over who got the best seat in the living room to watch television or who used the bathroom first each morning and for how long, who got to drive the car we shared as teenagers, who had to do more chores around the house, and so forth. The cry went up almost every day from someone who felt that they were being cheated out of their birthright by a sibling. That's not fair. An appeal would be made to a parent as arbiter in the dispute, but usually the dispassionate reply went something like, "Yeah, life's not fair. Y'all work it out." Now, I can look back and cringe at the thought of all this now, years later. Everything in our lives was evaluated on the premise that there would not be enough to go around, so you better get yours when you could. It was never true. It was just the premise. I can see now how we lived in the stifled air of scarcity, where if someone else got what they wanted or needed, the other would not. And so when Jesus tells this parable of the landowner and the laborers, I hear the echo of our childhood mantra, "That's not fair." Why should someone work just 1 hour and get the same wage I earned for working the whole day? That's not fair, even though I was fully compensated for what I did. Not fair, perhaps, in the ways of the world, but this parable redirects with its unsettling testimonial that God's grace is eminently abundant, and the kingdom calculation is not dependent on a variable of scarcity. Instead, the calculus integral to God's grace approaches infinity. That is, a wideness in God's mercy that we cannot begin to fathom, but into which we are invited to step and trust and let the buoyant grace of God pour into our lives here and now. But there's another layer of this of reality in this parable, and it invites us to consider, one that informs an urgent consideration for us in this moment. That's how parables work. They are literally cast alongside life. That's what the word parable means. They cast alongside our lives to lend wisdom in any given moment. This parable speaks repeatedly of the usual daily wage. That was one denarius, the minimum wage established by the Roman Empire for a day of labor. It was the bare minimum for survival. It was roughly sufficient to provide one meal for a worker and their family. Without it, without that work that day, they would likely go hungry. And there was lots of hunger in the empire. So a day laborer would stand in the street hoping a landowner would tag them for work simply so they could have a meal. It was a marginal existence, just one rung up from slavery, and often just one stroke of bad luck to slip back into slavery. All of it was of a cloth in the fabric of the imperial economy, and it was rife with abuse. Sound a bit familiar? Jesus was offering a radically different vision in this parable, cast alongside the imperial economy of his day and inviting us to cast it alongside ours today. Picture day laborers along the entry drive to Home Depot, desperately trying to make eye contact with a landowner driving by in hopes of a few bucks with which to feed their family. Two might be given a nod to hop in the back of the truck. The others are left behind. And all of it with a stifled air of depraved judgment cast in their direction, the assumption that because of their birth country or their skin color or their education level, they are somehow unworthy of a more respectful and replete existence that might allow them to cast their eyes beyond the urgency of just scoring their next meal. And Jesus comes along and casts a vision for a new world order grounded in profligate generosity. The metaphors are abundantly rich. The vineyard's ripened grapes, a harvest of plentiful redemption where the man keeps returning to the marketplace to gather more and more laborers, more in the morning, more at noon, more at 3, more at 5, more late in the day. It's scandalous in its seemingly random ways, presumably until the marketplace is all cleared out. A universal invitation to participate in the work. Remember, the parable begins, the kingdom of heaven is like this. About 15 years ago, Yale Divinity School professor Catherine Tanner wrote a book entitled Economy of Grace. I've referred to it multiple times in my teaching and preaching here because I find her thesis so eminently timely and apt. She casts a vision of God's kingdom alongside the imperial economy that's grounded in competition. She seeks to find another way, and that other way at its core is a reframing of the whole notion of economy, going back to its traced roots to the Greek oikoumene, from which we get our word oikoumene, which literally means household. Household. The further root, oikos, gives rise to many words that are involved work of the kingdom here and now, words like ecosystem and ecology and economy. The household is understood as the scope of reference for all that live together, however broadly you may define that. But within the household, all embrace a prevailing commitment to the common good. Trust and mutuality are manifest virtues, and all in the household are afforded space for leisure and creative outlets. A subsistence wage for some is simply not sufficient in the economy of grace. This alternative vision is further accentuated by universal inclusion, where relationships need not always be competitive or exclusive, because the pervading gift is one of belovedness, a gift with no conditions placed upon it. Part of the household equals beloved. And Jesus is asking us to consider, who is in your household? And how would an economy of grace inform the life of your household? My friends, we hurt this weekend. We're bewildered. Whatever your politics may be, it seems to me that we could at least agree that Ruth Bader Ginsburg fiercely sought to enlarge the concept of household across the span of her career. And as our nation's political leaders now battle about how best to replace her, I suspect we will all have opinions about what that process should look like. It is not my purpose to tell you what I think about it. But here's what I do have to say to you and to all of us. we can level our charges at the other in this moment and expend our energy on accusations that that's not fair. But I doubt any minds will be changed if our discourse remains only at that level. There must be something more. And what I'm saying is this parable should give us pause in this moment. And we should consider who all is in our household. Which begs the question, the one with whom you disagree is in your household too, right? So what are we to do with it all? You know, we opened our service this morning with the collect of the day that Canon Ross guided for us. We all cast our prayer in this collect. Grant us, God, not to be anxious about earthly things, but to love things heavenly. Now, I want to be very clear here. This is not a prayer that orients from the present moment to a future time, or even to a future time after this life. When Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven is like, he is casting a vision alongside our lives here and now, inviting us to consider a household of grace in which we might just meet the eyes of one another and share the gift of belovedness that's offered freely to all. What does that look like in your life in this moment? What would that look like in our nation?